Empower Radio presents Out of the Fog. Join intuitive guide and spiritual teacher Karen Hager for lively, positive conversation with light workers, healers, and dynamic wisdom keepers. Get ready for inspiration and connection. This is Out of the Fog on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Karen Hager.
Hello and welcome to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. Each week at this time, we gather for spiritual conversation and enlightening guests, and I am glad you're here. Time and distance are no barrier to energy, and that means that no matter when you're listening, no matter how you found us, you are here for a reason. And I hope something in the next hour lights you up and helps you move forward. What is your anxiety level right now? Are you're all happy and calm because you're listening to this splendid radio program? I hope so. I hope that's true for you. But for millions of us, anxiety can disrupt our physical, emotional, even spiritual lives. My guest on today's show is Dr. Marcy Shapiro. She grappled with anxiety on her own path, and now she works with patients to help them bring ease and peace of mind back into their lives. She's here to share her wisdom and to help you break free from anxiety. Are you ready to meet her? Marcy Shapiro, MD, is a family physician with extensive training and experience in many areas of natural medicine. She works with patients to address the many facets of illness and imbalance, biophysical, psychological, and spiritual, and she creates treatment plans that incorporate a variety of modalities. Marcy's the author of Transforming the Nature of Health and her new book, Freedom from Anxiety, A Holistic Approach to Emotional Well-Being. You can find out more about Marcy and her work at marcyshapiromd.com. Marcy, welcome to Out of the Fog.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, wonderful. I think I'd like to start with the really personal stuff. You did experience struggle with anxiety on your journey, and I'm wondering if you can share with us what that was like for you and how it has directed you on this path.
Absolutely. So I grew up in a very loving but pretty neurotic family where intense anxiety was just normal and worrying was just a normal expression of love. So anxiety became kind of a set point for me, as was worrying about what others thought about me, worrying about the world, worrying about the environment, finances, etc. And I had several mystical experiences also when I was a child that taught me kind of a different view of reality, one that was about interconnection and unity and ease and the imminence of the natural world. And I think those experiences, along with my own discomfort at feeling so much anxiety so much of the time, led me to begin to explore ways of finding greater inner peace. What I'd say when I was young, I had anxiety, sometimes mild and sometimes extreme, maybe 80% of the time. I thought of myself as shy. I wasn't very self-empowered. I wasn't assertive. I avoided all conflict. I wanted everyone to like me, whether or not I liked them. But through working with a variety of tools over many, many years and developing them and reading lots of stuff, I really changed my nervous system and changed my set point. And I'd say at this point, I'm not without anxiety, but that figure is probably closer to 15% of the time. And I feel much more resourced, much more able to find peace and kind of know what to do when I notice the signs of anxiety rising. And at this point, now people think of me as a kind of a chill person, very optimistic and pretty self-actualized.
How do you define anxiety? I mean, where is the place where it gets to be a problem or gets to be a condition? Because is a little bit normal make sense?
You know, I think that anxiety can be something that can be a little bit normal, a small amount of it, because it can let you know that what you're focusing on really isn't in your best interest. It isn't where source is really calling you towards your wholeness. It's you're moving away from your own inner guidance. So So I think if you can learn from it when you're at the level of subtle messages, and that's what I really try to teach patients, then that's great. Then it's a very empowering tool. Like, so when you notice a little bit of anxiety, you think, that's not how my inner being looks at this situation. But I don't think that that's, unfortunately, what happens with a lot of people, because in our world, most people aren't really taught to listen to their inner being and have an understanding that there's a communication that's happening there.
I think there also are ways in which society encourages a pattern of behavior that may increase anxiety in people who are already anxious. I just got back from LA, and there was a lot of honking and swerving and swearing and talking on the phone while people were driving. And there was this very sort of hard charging, I've got to get there faster, why aren't I there? I think sometimes we set up situations in society that almost encourages that anxiety response.
I think that that's absolutely true, and it's certainly true in the advertising industry. One thing that became crystal clear to me very early on in life is this, like, advertising in the media is selling scarcity and selling inadequacy and selling feelings that you're not good enough unless you use our product or take our path or whatever. And that's just tacitly is not true. But I think, you know, we're so surrounded and inundated by media and that kind of advertising that it's hard for people to just feel good about themselves as they are and who they are. You know, the Zen Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh said anxiety is the illness of our time, and it comes primarily from our inability to dwell in the present moment. And I think that's absolutely what you were just talking about, you know, being in LA and all the honking. It's just like, you know, you could just be in traffic and being okay with that, resting in place with that and moving forward, knowing that eventually you're going to get to where you want to be. And it doesn't really help the journey to add in all that tension. But I think we are trained in our society not to dwell in peace in the present moment. And I would love to see that shift. And I believe it is actually shifting through things like this radio show and through other different kinds of teachers and healers who are really promoting a different message and a different kind of self-understanding.
Do you believe that that peace that you're talking about, that interconnectedness, is that already there inside us and ready for us to connect with? I know that some people are kind of waiting for it to be given to them.
I think everybody is born with it. I think it's just our birthright, and it's an innate capacity. And that in traditional societies, that's something that's nurtured and nourished. And so that there's a greater sense of peace and harmony. And in our society, that is shunned. But it also comes from an understanding that we're mind, body, and spirit, and that we're not just machines or very glorified machines. And so I think that there's a misunderstanding in our contemporary society that leads to that. But yes, I think that every single person has it. In the book, I call it, you know, the inner wellsprings of peace or the inner lake of peace. And that is at the core of each of us. And so it doesn't have to be given by a spiritual teacher or granted from the outside. It's something that we can rest inside of ourselves and find. And it's very beautiful to find it. And I think once people start to find a clear pathway to it inside of themselves, there's a shift that happens where there's a sense of knowing, a sense of understanding, like, yes, I do have this inside of myself. And sometimes it's easier and sometimes it's more difficult to get to it depending on the circumstances and kind of where the thoughts have been going. But I think as that confidence grows, then we understand that who we really are.
Well, and it also helps us, I think, tap into our power to, once I've found that place of inner peace, even though I will naturally, in the course of events, probably wander away from it, I know the way back. Once I've made that shift, I have the power to return as I choose.
Exactly. that's it. It's just like once you know it's there, once you know that inside of yourself is peace, is separation from those kind of external swirling in the world, and this knowing of you know, the goodness and the wholeness and the love that's really inside of yourself, then you just say, okay, well, right now I'm not in that, but it's there. And the more times we dip into it and the longer that we dip into it, the more that inner knowing and that confidence grows. So one of the tools I mentioned that I have found incredibly empowering, and it's one that I think people experience after they have started to have a sense of inner peace, is just when you're in a moment of anxiety to say to yourself, I'm not going to always feel like this. I haven't always felt like this. I'm not going to always feel like that. And sometimes that just takes so much pressure off, because it's like it reignites that memory of like, yeah, somewhere inside of myself, I know what it feels like to feel whole.
Well, and because of the intimate connection between our emotions and our endocrine system and our immune system and all the parts of our body, you have to remember you're talking to a theater major here, but that everything is connected, that even the chemicals that are produced when we are experiencing that anxiety, they're momentary. They don't always stay forever. So if we can get through that surge, there's something else on the other side, then we can shift.
That's absolutely true. So we make neurotransmitters and neurochemicals in response to our feelings about our thoughts. So if we're thinking about something pleasant, we're going to have experienced feelings of well-being, of health, of wholeness, of joy. And those are very nourishing to our immune system. So the more happy we are more of the time, the better our immune system functions. On the other hand, if we're feeling a lot of fear, anxiety, anger, frustration, we're making a different bunch of neurochemicals. And those are going to be informing ourselves about our state of mind, and they change a lot of biological processes. But it's so very important to understand that those are temporary. Some of them only last a few seconds. And some of those neurochemicals are longer lasting, like an hour or two, and then even the longest acting of them are only going to be around a couple of days. So the more somebody learns to shift, and shifting is fair. Like sometimes people feel like they have to get to the bottom of it. And one thing I heard the teacher Abraham say at a workshop one time is, you can't get to the bottom, there is no bottom. And I was like, right on. That is so correct. You know, you don't get to the bottom. You just get further and further into a state of disempowerment. So you just have to back out of those states and try to get to a place where you're feeling more calm, more peaceful, more neutral. And then the neurochemicals that you start making in your body start to shift and reflect that to you. And really, in just a minute or two of getting off of an upsetting topic, you can have an enormous shift in the neurochemicals. So it really is, once I think people understand that, it really helps them a lot. It's just like they don't have to change all the problems in their lives, and they just have to change what they're focusing on to something that feels better to them.
Is it? And you're not fooling yourself, right? It's not that I'm really anxious about being stuck in traffic in LA, but if I suddenly think about, I love to knit, I think about a ball of yarn, a soft, fluffy, happy ball of yarn, that's going to fool my body into making different chemicals? Is that what you're saying? Or is it?
Well, it's not really fooling your body. It's actually kind of directing your thoughts. It's being empowered in how you're focusing. It's not really going to make the traffic go any faster or more smoothly to be stressing about it and wondering if you're going to get to your next engagement or what have you. It's, in fact, going to just, you know, ruin your own experience. Whereas if you're thinking about something calm and relaxing, then you're having a whole different bunch of neurochemicals and you're having a whole different experience of that. And I would also say that when we're stressed and anxious, it's like we have tunnel vision. We don't really see all the options that are available to us. We don't have the moments of inspiration that can come when we're in a more relaxed state. So in terms of being intuitive and open to other inputs, those are more shut down when we're feeling anxious or fearful or frustrated. So, you know, you might be stuck in traffic and thinking about knitting and kitties and sunsets, and then just have a sudden urge to make a left on a side street. And
awesome.
Voila, you're out of the traffic and you've routed all around it. But, you know, while you're focused on how bad the traffic is and grousing and being upset, you're not that those kinds of intuitive moments are not as available to you.
Oh, I love that. Because that is how intuition creeps in. It's when you are in the present moment and available to listen. And you're not all cluttered up with, why is that guy going so slow? Why can't they hurry up? What's the matter? I've only got 30 seconds, you know, 20 seconds. How much time do I have left? That's intuition creeps in when you are in that centered place and able to listen. Exactly right.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You have some steps in the book that can lead people to a greater awareness of their emotional fluidity. And to me, at least in my own experience with anxiety, for me, fluidity doesn't go with anxiety. Anxiety is about that rigidity of, oh my gosh, here it is. What do I do? There's nothing I can do. We're in the endless loop. And so I'd love it if you shared some of those steps to help increase our emotional fluidity. It starts with really noticing how you feel.
It starts with being aware of how you feel. And that's something I realized very early on as well, is that a lot of people often don't know how they feel. And if you don't know how you feel, you can't really shift how you feel. And then it's also very helpful to not judge how you feel. So emotions are really just information. And so they may feel uncomfortable, they may feel really delicious, but they're just information. So if you can look at the emotions you're having as responses to kind of how you're viewing the world or your circumstances or your thoughts, and then go, okay, so I find this type of emotion much more comfortable. So what are the kinds of thoughts that will help me move towards more of these kinds of thoughts and these kinds of emotions rather than ones that I find more uncomfortable? But not being self-critical or judgmental, because when you're struggling with anxiety, it takes a while. It's definitely like learning to play guitar or ride a bicycle or something like that. You have to practice. And making these kinds of shifts is not necessarily an easy thing right away. Or meditation. I mean, people always come to me and they say, you know, I can't meditate. Meditating is very difficult. I'm no good at it. And I say, nobody is good at it when they start trying to meditate. Everybody has thoughts like amazingly fast. And so part of meditation training and any kind of mindfulness training is that understanding. It's just like without judging yourself or any self-criticism, you just kind of return gently to the topic that feels better. Return if you're meditating to your breathing or your mantra or whatever it is that you've chosen to focus on, the candle flame. So it's the same when we're shifting our thoughts. We want to try to shift our thoughts to thoughts that feel more comfortable. And a lot of times I tell people, don't try to get the best feeling thought that you've ever had at one time. Because if you're really in a deeply anxious or fearful state, you're not really in range of your best feelings in the next, you know, 30 to 60 seconds. But you definitely can get somewhere more neutral. So if you can just think of something that feels more peaceful, and again, I'm going to refer to Abraham one more time. They call it backing out. And so Abraham says, just back out, go more general, get to the bigger picture of things. So the kinds of things that I said before, like saying, okay, I'm not always going to feel like this, or sometimes these kinds of situations really work out for me, or whatever it takes. I actually find the 12-step model is often very helpful in this, because it really helps us to understand that there's things that we can control and there's a lot of things that we can't control. So if we're upset about traffic or someone else's behavior, those are things we can't really control so well. But we can control our response to that. So So the steps are to find a new way to focus. And the way we do that is by just noticing how we are focusing and go, well, okay, is this comfortable for me or not comfortable for me? And if we're having anxiety, typically it's not comfortable. And then think, well, what would be a little better? And then I'm going to include one more step, which is also in the book. And that is to just allow yourself to experience it too. But one thing that's really important to know is if you're experiencing some anxiety or fearfulness, you can just say, right now I feel very anxious, or right now I feel very fearful, but you can let go of the story. You don't have to repeat to yourself the reason that you're feeling that way. You just let yourself feel it. Because that's in some ways just honoring yourself, but also if you drop the story, you're not continuing to make more of those neurochemicals over and over again, and you're not continuing to respond to worse and worse stories. And what will naturally happen if you let yourself feel the emotion without the story behind it is it'll start to shift, and that you'll feel it for a moment and then it'll be less and less and less, and it'll be just like floating to the surface. It'll be just like things open up. So that is very, very helpful. And then you're also being honoring of yourself and not judging yourself with that. So stop repeating the story, let yourself feel the feelings, and then when you feel ready, try to find something that feels a little bit better. And I encourage people to have a list of things that feel good to them when they think about it, things that are completely unencumbered. So nothing that you feel ambivalent about, something that you feel good about whenever you think about it. So that would be, for me, my nephew, my dog, sunset, my partner. There's lots and lots of things in my life that I can think about and that I can really start to feel feelings of love and well-being and wholeness. And so if you have a list, then you can start to go down your list. Well, what about, I'm thinking of things as I do this that are not necessarily always comforting, but that are sometimes comforting. But we'll go back to my dog, because my dog is always comforting. So he's a snuggle bunny. He's a cute little fluffy thing. He's, you know, he loves me. He's got a waggy tail, and he's just adorable, and he's enthusiastic, and he's young, and he loves to play with toys, and he's just a ball of fun. So if you have a list of things like that, then it can get you focusing on something else that feels much better to you.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, I talk about different rooms of the house. And so we can look at rooms. Oh, this is an important concept. Let me just back up a bit, is that when we have thoughts, the way our mind organizes them is by their emotional content. And so it's not, our minds are not organized chronologically, so we don't have a memory of when we were 13, and then we have another memory of when we were 13, and then we have another memory of when we were 14. That doesn't happen. What happens is that all the things that are memories, thoughts, experiences that have a similar emotional flavor are grouped together. So things that cause anxiety or give an anxiety response are grouped together, or things that are silly are grouped together, or things that are tenderhearted or filled with love are grouped together. And so I look at it as like rooms in the house, and there's the rooms that we really would rather not even be in our house, like anxiety and fear, and then there's the rooms that we're really happy to have in our house, like joy and tenderness and kindness. And so it's important to know that as we have thoughts, it's like lighting up that room. And so if we're having an anxious thought, then we're turning on the lights in the anxiety room. And as we have more anxious thoughts, because other things that we have anxiety about are all collected there together, then we're kind of walking further and further into that room. And that's why people always globalize. People talk about globalizing usually when they're globalizing about something upsetting, and they notice it as a phenomenon. But we actually globalize about positive things, too. So if we're having one happy thought, then it's going to recall another happy memory. And You know, like if I'm thinking about my little dog Jojo, I can think about other people I love and other pets I've had that I love. And I can easily get to like beautiful experiences I've had because those are all grouped together with the same emotional flavor.
And we're right at the bottom of the hour, Dr. Shapiro. And so I'm going to leave us standing outside the anxiety room in the pleasant place of waiting for the commercial break.
Okay.
And when we return with Dr. Marcy Shapiro, we're talking about her new book, Freedom from Anxiety. When we return, we're going to find out more about how we can turn down those lights in the anxiety room. I also want to explore some of the nutritional things that we can be doing to help ourselves become free from anxiety. It's Out of the Fog with Karen Hager, and we'll be right back after this.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home, where I belong.
It's always nice to come home. But these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home. And I love it, I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home, where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude! What happened to your face? I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6...
Ow.
Dude, what is
Ow.
This? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
And now back to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager on Empower Radio, empowerradio.com.
Welcome back to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager, and my guest on today's show is Dr. Marcy Shapiro. Her new book is Freedom from Anxiety, A Holistic Approach to Emotional Well-Being, and you can find out more about Dr. Shapiro and her work at marcyshapiromd.com. And of course, I really welcome your feedback on what you're hearing today. What inspiration does this give you? What questions does it raise for you? What would you like to share about your own journey with anxiety? You can always reach me through my website. That's KarenHager.com. It's also a great place to find out about upcoming classes and events. If you want to know where I will be stuck in traffic next, KarenHager.com is a great place to find that out. Now, Marcy, before we went to break, you were talking about how our thoughts are grouped according to emotional content, and that this can take us to a way of thinking about our thoughts, the way we are in the world, as the different rooms in a house. And when we focus on anxiety, we're lighting up the anxiety room. How do we turn off those lights or dim the lights so that we can see the other rooms?
There's lots and lots of ways to do that. I think the first thing is the understanding that we are in a room where we're lighting things up. It also can be like when we're walking down a modern supermarket and we're walking down like the cases of the refrigerator cases, and different cases are lighting up as we're walking by. So it's very much like that. So understanding that this is lighting up in response to our feelings about our thoughts, and that we can shift that. And so how to do that? Lots and lots of ways. One thing that really dovetails with one of the non-ads that you just had was the shelter pets. So pets can be enormously comforting and soothing, and looking at them, playing with them, petting with them, enjoying their antics can really help us get out of that room. And, there's pets that are actually formally trained for that, too. I do want to say that my sweet little dog, Jojo, was a shelter animal and not a puppy when I got him. And I totally agree with that ad. And so I was delighted to hear that. Adopt those shelter pets. They can really help your life a lot. Another thing that can help, and that I talk about extensively in the book, is different breathing exercises. One that I teach my patients, I have a little handout that I give people, is heart-centered breathing exercises, because our heart is really how we should be running our lives. It gives us greater wisdom. And in terms of the neurologic connections between the brain and the heart, there's many more connections from the heart to the brain than there are from the brain to the heart, which really implies that nature expected the brain to be listening and the heart to be speaking. So often what I'm going to have people do is imagine that their breath is coming in through the top of their head and out through their heart. And they'll do that 3 to 7 times. And then you can imagine that your breath is coming in through your heart and out through your solar plexus. Mm. And again, 3 to 7 times. And doing that for a minute can really, really settle the emotions and help dissipate some of those neurochemicals. There's lots and lots of other tools. And so, again, just like having the list of things to think about, having a list of tools that work for you. So taking a walk can be very helpful, or just looking out the window can be very helpful. There's different kinds of exercises that people can do. You can walk a labyrinth if you have that available to you, but you can trace a finger labyrinth, which is also a fine thing to do. So just finding tools that you know, once you understand that you can back out of that room, and finding the tools that work for you is great. Something I talk about a lot in the book is using essential oils. So essential oils really get us to a much more primal place. They bypass a lot of the thinking about things and go straight to where we process emotions, the limbic system. And so smelling something that smells really pleasing. Some people, that's lavender. Other people, it's vanilla. If you're very anxious, there's one that's called spikenard that is very, very calming, or patchouli, those kind of heavy oils. And a lot of times I just have my patients like have some bottles of essential oils that they like and just open them up and sniff the bottle. And that can really break through and help you to back out.
Well, I think our companion animals are so important in bringing us into the present moment. And there's a way in which opening that bottle and sniffing that, the lavender essential oil or the whatever it is, does the same kind of thing. It's almost like it wakes us up a little bit. Oh, there's my dog. Oh, there's that smell that's pleasing to me. and it shifts quick and quickly shift us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really wonderful and doesn't really require a lot of effort, you know. In fact, if your dog knows that you tend to be anxious, they're likely to come to you, or your cat, you know, they'll come just sit on your lap and plop down and purr. So it can really help us, and we can reach for that, but we can also know that that is available.
I want to ask you quickly, one of the things I found interesting in the book is you have a little bit of a discussion about electromagnetic fields and the way that they can affect people who deal with anxiety. And I wonder, since I'm imagining, as you say this, me in my room with my lavender essential oil and my dog Pepper, who loves me and I love her. And I'm also noticing that in that room with me is the television, is the Kindle, is my cell phone, is my internet radio that I love so much, console thing that's hooked up to the Wi-Fi. And you believe that electromagnetic fields can have an effect on our perception of anxiety as well, right?
Absolutely. And I don't think it's the same for every person. So I think some people are much more sensitive and other people are not particularly sensitive. And so I think the only way to find out if you're sensitive, besides, you know, a suspicion or intuition, is to actually try doing without it. So I was just on vacation in Mexico, and I had a couple of days where I didn't really use any of my electronic devices.
What?
And I can really feel a settling down in my nervous system when that happens. That is really delicious. So for people who are very sensitive, and so I often just say to people, give it a try. Like, turn off your Wi-Fi, take your computer out of your room, take all of those electronic things out of your room, and see if you feel any difference. And there's not really, for most of us, any harm in turning off the Wi-Fi overnight when nothing much is happening. So often people will be able to tell, wow, that made a really big difference, or nah, it didn't make much of a difference at all. And so it's a clarifying situation. Or else, you know, try, you know, I've planned to try a media-free week for quite a while. I haven't done it in a while, but I know that can also, you know, if I know that everything is tucked in, know that that is very, very satisfying and soothing to me. Another thing in the bedroom, particularly at night, is that the blue lights are very stimulating. So blue light from the computer or blue LED light, your brain will perceive that as daytime, as a wakeful time, and it will keep many people awake. So you want to avoid blue light in the bedroom. It's more like when people are astronomers or looking at the night sky, they'll use a red light. And that's what your brain accommodates to as a night kind of light, because that's a firelight shade, whereas blue light is something that's really a daylight shade. So those are things that are really quite helpful for some people, and it's just good to be aware that that might be, you know, because Wi-Fi and all this electromagnetic fields is really different than it ever was in prior human history, that you may not even have any awareness that you're sensitive to it until you start to ratchet it back.
Well, we're bombarded by it, I think. There's so much. It's everywhere. That's an important thing to be aware of. Something else I think you were talking about, judging your own sensitivity to those electromagnetic fields by allowing yourself to test and see how it feels to you. That's what you advise about food as well, isn't it? See what food feels good to your body.
Right. So if there's lots and lots of diets out there, and there's lots of different thoughts about diet, and I think the bottom line is that there's no one diet that is right for every person on the planet. And so that's why some people can be very enthusiastic about one way of eating and others can eat in a drastically different way and be very enthusiastic about that. And so consulting your body, listening to your gut, finding out what feels good to you now in the present moment, I think is really important. And it's a wholehearted kind of feeling. It's not just what feels good to your mouth, because your mouth, you know, is not necessarily the most reliable indicator. You have to consult your GI tract and your joints. So somebody, for example, who's having joint pains, you know, you can learn to, like, hold something in your hand. Is this brownie going to feel good in my joints, or is this carrot going to feel good in my joints? And as you develop a sensitivity to that, which isn't that hard to do, then you'll know. You'll know, like, this isn't really the right thing, or, yeah, I feel really good about this. This is fine for me. So nutrition, I think, is really important, and it's really central, because in our GI tract is where we make many of our calming neurotransmitters. So people think of things like serotonin or GABA, which are both important calming neurotransmitters, as brain neurotransmitters. And while that's true, actually most of what of them that we make in our body is actually made in our gut. And so if we're not digesting our food well, if we're not eating foods that can help give the building blocks for those, if we're tense all the time, then we're not making enough of those calming neurotransmitters. So nourishing ourselves in a way that our body really wants to be nourished helps tremendously.
Do you have specific dietary recommendations that you make to your patients to help calm things down, to help lessen anxiety?
I do. So one of the things I really try to find is I try to talk to people about how much fats they have in their diet and encourage them to include more traditional fats. And traditional fats would be butter or ghee or olive oil or coconut oil or lard from pigs that have had, you know, a nice life and, you know, have been grass-fed and free-range, et cetera. So any kind of fat that people used like 150 years ago that has been raised in the manner that it was 150 years ago is usually good. So, okay, of course, they should be organic and free-range and grass-fed. And a lot of times people are afraid of fat because they feel like fat will make them fat. But that is, an unfortunately, just the same word, but it isn't really true at all. Fat is really essential for the functioning of the nervous system. So all of our nerve cells, all of our cells of our body are encased in different kinds of fats. It's what improves connectivity in the nervous system, and it what improves calming. And often, you know, when I tell people just eat more butter, that improves their anxiety just like 30% when they just start eating butter, and it makes them happy too. So that's important. And then, you know, avoiding foods that stress the system. So I think we think that sugary foods are going to be really, you know, make us feel better because we feel down, but there's such a difficulty with that for so many reasons. One is that it can really get the whole cortisol system alarmed and put us into an alarm state. Number two is a lot of people don't really feel good about eating a lot of sugary foods. And I'm not talking about, you know, the occasional thing or birthday cake or something like that, but I'm talking about, you know, constant eating of sugary foods. People have mixed feelings about it. So they feel better for about 5 seconds and then they feel worse. So when we're eating things and considering that, we want to consider, how does it feel to the whole of us, and how does it feel kind of over a longer term? And so if we notice what foods are going to be soothing to our system, and like I said, it can be different for different people, but having enough protein, I think, is really important. Having whole foods is very, very important for many people. So having foods that are without chemicals or pesticides or herbicides, and having them in as natural a state as possible. So many food additives are real irritants to the nervous system, and they also can affect our ways that we're focusing. And so this is, you know, people know this from, like, children with ADD and ADHD. Often if they consult a holistic doctor there or any practitioner, they're going to take them off of those kinds of foods immediately. And often there's an enormous improvement that will happen then. Broth, if there's any kind of gut disturbance, broth can be helpful, and also probiotics. So I look at our gut as really a cooperative venture between beneficial bacteria and us. And, you know, in a healthy gut, there should be 10 times as many bacteria as there are cells of our own body. And so So making sure we're having a lot of those probiotic bacteria is going to help with the synthesis of the calming neurotransmitters. And it's also going to prevent overgrowth of things that are not so harmonious with us, like yeasts.
It's interesting because this I'm finding this very empowering, because as I make choices about what I put in my body, about the thoughts that I choose to stay with, the room I choose to live in, my responsibility for my own spiritual practice, it kind of takes me out of that rigid loop of anxiety and puts me in a place where I have a lot of choices all of a sudden.
Well, sure, because we realize that this is not just something that's happening to us over which we have no control, but we understand that we really are kind of the center of our own universe, and we're the center of how things go for ourselves. So how we choose to, what inputs we choose for ourselves, what thought inputs we choose for ourselves, and what food inputs, what exercise inputs, all of those things really will affect how we experience life and how we experience the world, and it will direct the course of things for us. And so it is very empowering to really understand that we can make changes in these things that are very, in some ways, simple and basic, but fundamental, and it can have profound benefit for us in a short amount of time. So it's great.
Something else that you bring up that I think is important, and I know for me personally has been getting a handle on this has helped me a lot, that deficiencies in things like vitamin D, magnesium, the B vitamins, looking at that and understanding whether or not you're at an optimal level can also make a big difference in how you feel.
Absolutely. One of the things I don't mention in the book, because really I started really understanding more about it like a week after I pressed that final send button, was about genetics, and particularly a gene called catechol-O-methyltransferase, and how when people have a single or even more so a double mutation on COMT, they have difficulty breaking down epinephrine and norepinephrine, which are the fight-or-flight neurotransmitters. And so there's an alternate route that the body can use besides the COMT route to break those down, and that involves the mineral lithium. Lithium is normally occurring in waters, and this is not lithium like what is a pharmaceutical drug that people who have bipolar might be prescribed, but this is just a naturally occurring salt. And so a lot of times people are depleted in lithium, and adding that as a salt can really be helpful. Now, magnesium is a deficiency that's so very, very common, and it is involved in over 300 different chemical processes in the body. It's one of the major minerals in the body, and we're much, much more likely to be deficient in magnesium than we are in calcium. And the processes that magnesium is involved in are the calming part of the nervous system. So there's two main parts to the nervous system. There's the sympathetic, which is the fight or flight, the thing that gets us moving, gets us motivated, gets us focused part of the nervous system, and the parasympathetic part of the nervous system, which is the calming, relaxing, soothing part. So when muscles are cramped up, then magnesium can help. When we're feeling agitated emotionally, when we can't sleep, magnesium can be very helpful. And you can even test for your magnesium level. Most doctors will test a serum magnesium, which is a useless test. You have to test a red blood cell magnesium. That is the accurate test to assess your body stores. Many doctors will not have heard of it, but naturopaths know what the right test is. And if you test that, then you want to find yourself kind of in the higher end of the range, particularly if you have anxiety. But often people can take quite a bit of magnesium, 300, 450 milligrams a day. It can loosen the bowel, so you want to be careful with that. And especially if you're very deficient, the more deficient you are, the more likely it is to be laxative. But fortunately, there's also magnesium chloride oils that people can apply topically, or you can take magnesium sulfate, which is Epsom salts bath, and that's another way to absorb magnesium. And then there's lots and lots of nutrients, as you mentioned. The B vitamins are very important. There's some that are specifically important for calming, like B6 and pantothene. And then overall, the whole grouping of B vitamins is really important, especially when people have had a lot of anxiety over a long period of time. Usually there's some amount of adrenal fatigue. And so when we're under stress, when we have a perception of stress, then the body uses more B vitamins. So just replenishing them either from foods or from whole food type of supplements can be very, very helpful. And then vitamin D, you also mentioned, I think that that's really important. Vitamin D is really more of a proto-hormone, and it's important for so many things. People think of it mostly as for bones, but it actually is very important for prevention of depression, soothing anxiety. And so having a nice, robust level of vitamin D in the body is important.
And all of those together, we're building a beautifully layered picture here of all the different things that we can tweak or adjust or become aware of or make different choices about to help ease that anxiety. And I think that, at least in my practice with the people who I talk with, sometimes people feel like they got trapped in the anxiety room and there's no way out. There is no choice, that they're the only thing ahead is more anxiety and more suffering. And as I read your work, Marcy, you're saying the opposite of that.
I am absolutely saying the opposite. And I say it from my own personal experience and from many, many patients that I have worked with. So I want people to really understand that you do not have to stay stuck in an anxious kind of state, and that you can change your set point, you can change your nervous system, and there's many, many tools to help you. And, you know, I offer so many in the book, and I never intend for anybody to use all of them, but there should be something for everyone in that book, because there's just so many ways to soothe yourself and find a better balance point. So if I had one thing I would like people to take away from this hour that we're having here, is the understanding that you don't have to continue to suffer, that help is available, and that you can make changes that can give you short-term and long-term relief. And just like I said at the beginning, you know, I grew up and I was anxious most of the time. It was just normal for me. And now I am anxious very little amount of the time, and the way people perceive me is really different. And if it can happen for me, it can happen for you.
When people head over to MarcyShapiroMD.com, what will they find there? How can they connect with you?
Well, it's my medical practice website, and so it kind of talks more about me and my philosophy of healing, and there's a little mention of both of my books, and of course when I have upcoming books, those will also be mentioned too. And then often I will post about speaking engagements, also do that on Facebook and Twitter, so, you know, other places I'm going to be speaking or sharing information about a variety of things. One of my upcoming talks is actually on medical cannabis, and that's at the Ohlone Herb School in July. And I talk about medical cannabis for anxiety in the book, and of course there's many other uses for medical cannabis that are not really in the scope of this talk that we're having right now. So that's some of the things that you'll find on my website. And then if, you know, somebody is local to my area and would like to make an appointment, I am taking new patients, although it's probably like a month till somebody could get in to see me as a new patient. So, so there's a lot of information there.
Wonderful. So all
you can
that
definitely like me on Facebook. It would be, I think it's under Transforming the Nature of Health.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Yes, I'll like you.
Okay, good.
No, that's wonderful. And social media, too, can be such a powerful tool for getting the word out. And also, I think, and I believe this is true of radio as well, it builds community. So that's another wonderful way to realize that you're not alone.
Absolutely. I love social media and I love radio. I feel like many of my best experiences of talking about the book have been with wonderful radio hosts like you.
Oh, well, thank you very... Now I'm going to double like you on Facebook. Thank you very much. Marcy, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm grateful for your time and for the gift of that book. Tremendous tools in there to really help us be empowered, really help us embrace our choices around anxiety. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. That was Dr. Marcy Shapiro. Her new book is Freedom from Anxiety, A Holistic Approach to Emotional Well-Being. Find out more about Marcy and her work at marcyshapiromd.com. And of course, head over to karenhager.com. Check out what I'm doing. There are new classes and events up for you all the time. And I really want to hear from you, how you feel about the show, who you'd like to hear interviewed next, and how your journey's going. And thank you for listening today. Together we are spreading a little more light in the world, and a little more light is always a good thing. Until next time, I'm wishing you peace.